Hello, I'm Mark Shainbloom. This is number 0385, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0385. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actress and animal activist Loretta Swit on her new book, Switheart. She has been painting watercolors since she was 6 years old.
I won my first art prize when I was six. That pushy little girl saying, Mommy, there's a contest. I want you to put my drawing into the contest. I wore her down because she really didn't understand this child who would rather sit there and paint and draw and doodle than go out and play.
Comic impressionist Rich Little, whose book is called Little by Little. He talks about his career.
It began at school. I imitated my teachers, and I knew this was going to be my lifetime work because it wasn't long before the teachers were charging a two-drink minimum and a cover charge.
Peter and Allison Denby, creators of the parlor game Watch Your Mouth. Where did the idea for this game come from?
We were watching the movie called The Boss with Melissa McCarthy in it. One of the scenes early in the show is her getting her teeth whitened in her office, and she has in this mouthpiece that causes her to talk funny. And I just found it particularly humorous. So my wife started holding our lips open and saying funny things to each other and laughing, and one thing led to another, and we built that concept into something that would allow interaction between teams and give them content to laugh about and a little bit of structure around it, and we had a game.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0385 was Mark Shainbloom, who is an award-winning comic book and science fiction writer. He co-created the characters Northgard and Angloman. Thank you very much, Mark, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. A program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? In Texas, we always seem to have a plethora of stories that involve guns. And as you know, stories that originate in a Walmart are almost always far from what civilized people call the norm. So imagine a story that comes to us from a Texas Walmart. You know it's going to be somewhat explosive. Well, in November, an arranged custody swap of a child from one grandmother to another in a Walmart parking lot near Dallas ended up with both ladies pulling guns and they started firing. One granny was hit in the neck and the other was arrested after she also fired at an off-duty officer trying to calm things down. Wow. Just imagine the lineage of parenting skills that's working its way through the family tree of that kid. His future looks bright. Yikes. Okay, this next story is just all kinds of wrong. A Florida woman said she is paying her way through college by selling her positive pregnancy tests and urine online on Craigslist. The ad on the Jacksonville area Craigslist page, offers positive pregnancy tests or urine in an absolutely no-questions-asked type of deal. The woman, who is 3 months pregnant, is selling the positive tests of urine for $30 each, but the Craigslist post says customers traveling more than 60 miles can get two positive tests for $35. The post reads, and by the way, the English grammar is not that great in the post, but I'll try and follow through here. Very self-explanatory. I am 3 months, and I am providing a product in which the consumer is able to purchase positive pregnancy test or urine for your own use. Whether you are using it for your own amusement, such as a prank, or to blackmail the CEO, or wherever who you are having an affair with, I don't care at all. This is an absolutely no questions asked type of deal. Tell me what you need. I provide it for monetary exchange. Okay. And there was not a lot of punctuation in there, in, by the way. Not a comma, nothing. Anyway, the woman said she's using the money to fund her college education. Well, I take it she's not going to be an ethics major or a literature major. Anyway, a robber struck a Chipotle Mexican Grill in Des Moines, Iowa, demanding the cashier fill a bag with money. The cashier was so scared she ran into the back, leaving the robber alone at the counter. He didn't get any money, but he got away with a $7 burrito, according to a police spokesperson. The local newspaper said that there was no word on whether the burrito was chicken or steak. Well, if there was ever a good time for a burrito to be E. coli, this might be it. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Okay, this next story shows a growing trend that I find somewhat problematic. I almost made this person the idiot of the day, but it just shows the increasing problem of people doing idiotic things via social media. Police in Gainesville, Florida, are pretty sure they have the right person in custody in a shooting case. 24-year-old Kendra J. McNish is charged with shooting into a dwelling and aggravated stalking after doing a Facebook Live video showing her following her boyfriend's ex-girlfriend, threatening to harm the woman, and then shooting into her apartment. The entire sequence was broadcast on Facebook. McNish, whose job is shown as stylist on her arrest report, was confronted by police at a cosmetology school. She said she knew nothing of any shooting, but then said, "This situation is funny," and asked for a lawyer. Sure, it's funny, but not for the reasons she thinks. You know, clearly, social media is becoming a magnifying glass for stupidity. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? TV icon Loretta Swit is best known for her Emmy-winning television role on the long-running hit CBS series MASH. But her talents also go beyond acting. She is also an artist and an animal activist, and she has combined those two traits in a book entitled Switheart, The Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. Loretta joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Loretta.
Oh, well, hello there.
Hi.
Is it cold up there? Do you have a lot of snow?
We have a bit of snow, and it's starting to warm up just a little bit. It's finally above the freezing mark, but it's still winter. Here we are enjoying the holiday period. Your book, first of all, I guess a lot of people might be surprised with your artistry as a painter, but this is something you've been doing for a long time, I believe since you were a little girl?
A long time, yes. I didn't mean to cut you out. But yes, a long, long time. I won my first art prize when I was 6.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, can you imagine that pushy little girl saying, "Mommy, there's a contest. I want you to put my drawing into the contest." And I wore her down because she really didn't understand this child who would rather sit there and paint and draw and doodle than go out and play. So there you have it.
Was there ever a period in your life where you thought this is a direction your life might go as opposed to being an actress?
No. My life did go in that direction. I knew I was going to have an arts career. I was always out there. I was a cheerleader, a majorette. I was directing plays in high school, as acting. I was singing in the choir. I was dancing. I was always out there in the arts. And I knew that's where I was going.
But when I mean artist, I mean as a painter. Did you think maybe as a painter that would be your profession?
No. As a matter of fact, it took me a long time to appreciate what God gave me, actually. I've never studied. I had a dear friend who studied for years, and we were going to have dinner one night, and she was running late. So I said, "Okay, you know, I'll wait for you." And she handed me one of her big sketch pads, and she said, "Here, amuse yourself. I'll be as fast as I can." So I did a sketch, And she came out. She had no idea that I had been doing this since I was a kid. And she just went crazy. She said, how cool, ha, you know. She said, I've been studying for years to learn what you just sort of doodled. I mean, how, wow, you know. So I told her about, you know, that I'd been doing that. Anyway, she kept it. She framed it. And for Christmas, she bought me a beautiful artist's easel to encourage me to keep it up, you know, keep doing it. The book, even today, was not my idea. My publisher was on a private plane with me and actually the sponsor. And he saw some of my artwork on my computer, and he said, whoa, wait, hold it, you know. This has got to be in a book. Nobody knows you do this. This is important. And, of course, with my activism, to combine that with a book where the proceeds for the sales will go into helping animals, and it's like coming full circle.
Wow.
When I say I've always been in the arts, I did a series called Those Incredible Animals. So there I was in front of a camera, which is what I do, and I was dealing with animals in a hands-on fashion and talking about their plights and what we can do about it and so forth. So it's all been like, it's been as though it's one big picture for me, combining all of that. And I always focused on animal art because I was appealing to that audience, people who would buy paintings or a Giclée prints of animals because they had animals or they loved animals and they wanted to help in some fashion. And then I started taking commissions to do, oh, will you do my little doggy? Or in some cases, the dog has passed on and they want a memento, a memorial. So it just evolved. It just kept evolving.
Now,
it's not that I didn't take my work seriously. It's just that I didn't quite measure its value until I started to use it in relation to my activism.
And about your activism, animal activism is very important to you. At what point did you realize, or that because of your popularity, because of your status as a well-known actress, that you could affect change in the way animals were treated?
I think I've always known that the important thing about fame is that you have a platform. People listen to you, and if you have a cause, you have access to people. They respect you. They listen to you. They know that you're not lying to them, and they believe you. And, I never trashed my belief. I didn't sell some diet cookie that was going to lose 10 pounds in 4 minutes, or, you know, I kept true to my audience and to my characters. I think I chose my roles carefully. I played strong women, empowered women, and women who were ready to grab their lives and do something essential for the goodness of man with their lives. And I knew very early on that television is a very, very powerful teacher. And it was important that my message was one I'd be proud of for the rest of my life. I get mail still. In fact, the other day I was in the middle of a phoner interview, and it was one of those that you called in, and she flat out said she was an ICU nurse because of me, because she was inspired by the work nurses do. And I have lauded nurses for years, since I know what goes into their daily lives. They are unappreciated, underpaid, neglected as a group, and yet if ever they walk out, if ever they leave us, go on strike, we're going to be in very, very big trouble. nurses are amazing women, and I admire them. And it was, I just finished playing Eleanor Roosevelt. It's important for me as an actor to love and admire the characters that I play, or at least have an empathy about them, with them.
In what project did you play Eleanor Roosevelt?
That is the project. It's called Eleanor, Her Secret Journey, and it's a one-woman show, and I just did four shows in Laguna Beach, California, beautiful Laguna Playhouse. And I'm happy to say a lot of young people were interested, and we were sold out for all four performances, and they've invited me back because of the overflow and because of the interest, and that really fills my heart with joy.
There's
so much still to be learned from Eleanor Roosevelt.
You're in New York right now. Could you ever see yourself playing Eleanor on the Broadway stage?
Well, it's a small piece. Yes, of course, I would be happy to do that. I think its audience is more for a smaller off-Broadway intimate, a more intimate theater. Although I've done Shirley Valentine to 2,000 seat houses, and that's also a one-woman show. Yes, of course it could come to Broadway, absolutely. The stage is the stage. It doesn't matter where it is. I was on stage with, I think it was Shirley Valentine, and there was a cyclone warning approximately 7 minutes before the curtain. The lights went up, fire department people came running down the aisles, took me to a bomb shelter, the audience, that we all were taken away, and I had two standing ovations, one when they let us out of the theater, and then I finished the play in the bomb shelter. I didn't act it so much as I told them what the rest was and explained how it ended and so forth. A stage is anywhere you have an actor and an audience. That's a stage. In prehistoric times, you had this bearded guy wearing some, hair shirt, wearing a dinosaur's robe or something, acting out something to a few people in a cave. He was telling a story. The minstrels. We've done that everlastingly from the beginning of time. We were telling stories. The Bible is that. It's telling a story to an audience, and that's what we do. So a stage, I'd love to come to Canada with it. I'd love, wherever there's an audience who's receptive to that piece, I'm there. Have Eleanor Will Travel.
And you're telling a story with your book. We should mention the book is Sweetheart, the Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. It contains 65 full-color paintings and drawings, and proceeds from the book will be donated to charities and programs that are dedicated to animals, correct?
That's correct. We have formed the Sweetheart Animal Alliance.
Excellent.
The proceeds go into this fund and are channeled out to all those needy groups, and or ones that I don't even know about necessarily, who find out about the alliance and call and say, can you help us do whatever? And there'll be book parties and book sales and so forth. There's a wonderful shelter in Philadelphia, for example, who has 20,000 strong supporters, and they want to give a big book party. So again, if they all are interested in the book, they buy the book, or they buy it for somebody, or this is all going to be going towards helping animals and ending cruelty, putting people out there, educating young people about spaying and neutering, closing down puppy mills, kitten mills, all the horrors, everything that goes on today that is cruel for animals. All the money is going to go towards putting an end to that. then it's not an easy mission, because as a society, we're still killing each other. We're still killing each other. And I'm there asking not to kill an animal, which society regards as a lower form of life. So it's a hard sell. It's a tough mission, but I believe in the goodness of man. I really do. I, as an example, always to take Anne Frank, who's hiding and is living inside of a regime that's looking to kill her and her family, and eventually does. And she still believed in the goodness of the human spirit. And if she can do that, I can be inspired in the same way. And as I look back at my years of activism, I can see the growth. It keeps me going. I can see how far we have come, where actually people will be punished, will be fined, will be, because they have been cruel to an animal, where they will get a summons. They will be, we're learning bit by bit that we're all joined. There's no separation. We are animals. We are two-legged animals. This is our world. We have to take care of it. We're only going to come around once, and we need to protect every living creature on the planet. And so, but again, it's a tough mission.
Well, Loretta, you yourself are an inspiration. I'll mention the book again. It's called Sweetheart, The Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. People can go to your website at sweetheart.com.
Yeah, sweetheart.com. Let me quickly mention also, when they see the book, the letters are Sweetheart, which it is, and Sweetheart, which is my nickname and my logo, the Sweetheart Animal Alliance Foundation, for example, Sweetheart. But the book can be read both ways. It can, at first glance, looks like Sweetheart, and then when you get closer and look at it, it is Sweetheart.
Thank you very much.
And it's I'm so thrilled with the response. It has been overwhelming.
Thank you very much, Loretta, for being on the program with us. It's been a pleasure and an honor to speak to you.
Thank you for your time. God bless. Bye bye.
Loretta Swit, talking about her book Sweetheart, The Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0385, and you'll find links to Loretta's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. And she had a lot to say, and we had so little time, so I promise at some point we will try and get her back on the show.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Kelly Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to impressionist Rich Little. Plus, we'll meet the creators of the Watch Your Mouth game. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and a lot more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, according to a police report, officers in Austintown, Ohio, investigated reports of advertisements on a classified ad website posted by a known prostitute in the area. In the ad, 30-year-old Samantha Maxwell allegedly charged $80 for a quick stay and $100 for an hour. An officer contacted Maxwell and set up a rendezvous. According to the report, Maxwell promised to engage in this officer's gummy worm fetish as well, and he did not have to bring any other items besides the gummy worms. When Maxwell arrived at the hotel, she was arrested and charged with soliciting sex and possessing unspecified criminal tools. The report said Maxwell told police she started her career in prostitution 10 years ago to support a heroin addiction, but now she was doing it to pay her bills. Well, up until now, I had never heard of a gummy worm fetish. As for the charges, let's see Samantha worm her way out of this one. And people who wanted to save money on their medical bills suffered immense pain after a fake dentist pulled their teeth without anesthetics, according to police in Florida. The Manatee County Sheriff's Office said that they have arrested 53-year-old Robert Rhinelander after being accused of offering cheap dental care without being licensed. According to the police investigation, Rhinelander offered cheap dental services out of his customers' homes. He claimed to have practiced dentistry in South Carolina before moving to the state. When police investigated Rhinelander, they found that he was not a dentist. One victim told police that Rhinelander had removed about 10 teeth without anesthesia and had dentures done. As a result, she suffered a lot of pain. Rhinelander was arrested after an undercover agent arranged to meet with him to perform dental work. Okay, he pulled out 10 teeth out of some poor woman's head without anesthetics. Now, seriously, if you were this woman, don't you think perhaps after the second painful extraction that you'd wise up and say, let's rethink this, shall we? Well, if you're looking to save money on anything, remember that old adage, you get what you paid for. Well, and finally in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, how drunk is too drunk to drive? Well, we have two really simple examples of that. Number one, 35-year-old Michelle Keys, among those joyously caught up in Iowa's upset win over highly ranked Michigan in football in November and celebrating that night in Iowa City, was slurring and incoherent and told police she was certain she was standing in Ames, Iowa, which was 120 miles away, and had just watched the Iowa State-Arizona game, a matchup that has not been played since 1968. Yeah, she's drunk. Number two, a 38-year-old woman was arrested in Springwood, Australia in November when police stopped her car at 3 a.m. at an intersection with a children's swing set wedged onto the roof of her SUV. She had shortly before mistakenly driven through someone's backyard and through said swing set. In the light of day, how do you seriously mount a defense in a case like this? I mean, really? No, officer, it's my kid's mobile swing set. Really? Yeah, that ain't gonna fly. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Rich Little has been a master mimic for decades, with more than 200 voices in his repertoire. He's brought to life the persona of the biggest stars and many U.S. presidents, and he continues to wow audiences with his live shows. He's currently working on his latest project, Little by Little, a self-written humorous show about his life featuring over 30 characters. A book with the same title came out at the end of last summer. And Rich Little joins us on the line right now from Las Vegas. Hi, Rich.
How are you doing? Good.
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. There's always something I've wanted to ask you, especially since, you know, you are a master impressionist. At the time that you came along, there were other impressionists as well who were also big stars, and you don't see so many of them today. And I'm wondering, is part of the reason the fact that you guys all did voices of people who themselves were bigger than life, and we just don't have those kind of stars anymore?
That's exactly right. You hit it right on, yeah. We don't. When I came along, comedy was booming, movies were great, a lot of big stars that were fairly easy to impersonate, and today it's a lot tougher, a lot tougher.
Another thing that I think that bodes well for your career is so many people came from the comedy world coming from Canada, who were very successful in the United States. And I always get the impression it's we're on the outside looking in, and we observe what a lot of people in the United States take for granted, and that's where we find the funny.
Well, you're right about that. There were a lot of comedians that came down from Canada. I've no idea why. I guess they wanted to hit the big time. And, you know, I was one of them. I was doing well in Canada. I was born in Ottawa. And went to Toronto and did a lot of variety shows and a lot of clubs, private parties and industrial shows, and then got on the Judy Garland show in 1964. And that was my big break, and that's what brought me to the States.
Now, as an impressionist, were you someone who impersonated either teachers at school or people in your family? Where did it begin for you?
Yeah, it began at school. I imitated my teachers, and I knew this was going to be my lifetime work because it wasn't long before the teachers were charging a two-drink minimum and a cover charge.
I mentioned in the introduction your book.
I should have got their signatures down. It would have done me a lot better, but I did their voices. I used to answer them in class on the teacher's voice.
Wow.
Usually the wrong answer. That's what infuriated them.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction your book and your show, Little by Little. In going back over your life and looking at your career retrospectively, did you learn anything about yourself in doing this project?
Well, it isn't really a biography. You know, I touch on my childhood, but it's mostly about funny things that have happened with me and a lot of the people that I've worked with down through the years. Most of them are gone now, unfortunately, but I was very privileged to work with a lot of my idols, Jack Benny, George Burns, and Lucille Ball, and John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, you know. And, you know, it just was a dream come true, actually. I never dreamt that I would get to know them and then work with a lot of them, but it did happen, and it's one of the big thrills of my life, and that's why I decided to write this book, because I had so many stories, so many funny stories about the people that I've worked with.
Well, clearly the audiences love what you do, but what was it like doing an impression for someone whom you idolized in front of them? What was that like?
Well, you know, it took a lot of settling down on my nerves, you know, because I was working with these giants and I was in my 20s and you know, I'm doing the Dean Martin roast standing in front of George Burns and Jack Benny and Bob Hope and all these great comedians. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure, but it was terrific, you know, and they seemed to love it. You know, I did 24 Dean Martin roasts, I think, more than anybody, because if I could imitate more than five people on the dais, they usually put me on the show, you know.
As I mentioned, you've also done the voices of many U.S. presidents, Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, the list goes on. Have you done impressions of the presidents in front of presidents?
Oh, sure. I once did Nixon years ago in front of him. And while I was doing it, he looked puzzled, and he turned to his wife, Pat, and said, why is this young man speaking in a strange voice? He didn't know I was doing him. But Reagan loved it. I mean, Reagan was my best audience. He had a terrific sense of humor, and I saw a lot of Reagan when he was president. I performed at the White House a number of times, and we became actually pretty good friends, and used to talk a lot, you know, and he had a great sense of humor. Wow, he was, I think if he hadn't become president, he might have become a comedian, because he just loved jokes, and he loved my impression, and, you know, he one time said to me, he said, "Rich, you know, I think you do me better than I do. So when I pass away, I think they should bury you."
One of the things.
Luckily that didn't happen. Right. But I thought of it when he did finally pass. I thought of that remark. You know, we had many great times at the White House. He was the best. Just the best.
One of the things I've always been impressed about your impressions is that there are various kinds of impersonators, and I find that some people go for, shall we say, heightening the obvious in somebody's mannerisms and voice, but when you do an impression, I find it's the material that's funny, but the voice and the mannerisms are spot on. You don't really overdo it. Was that something you did that you did on an obvious point of view, and something that you worked on to try not to be?
Well, I wanted to be an impersonator,
right.
And I think an impressionist is one that gives their impression of a famous person. It can be an exaggeration, it can be a cartoon, but I always wanted to do an exact copy, so that's an impersonation. And you know, I didn't really exaggerate the person too much, and that's why I did a lot of dubbing for movies when movie stars had either passed away or lost their voices, because I could do it pretty spot on, and you know, it wasn't a caricature. So you know, that was what I did. I became an impersonator rather than an impressionist.
And
mimic is the same word, really. It's pretty much the same, but I'm an impersonator, really.
We should mention, you know, I brought that up because you did voices. For instance, David Niven, when his vocal cords were gone due to illness, you did
right. The
voiceover, the looping for Curse of the Pink Panther. You also did Peter Sellers' voice for him, and I also understand you did Gene Kelly's voice for him as well, too.
That's right. I did a Christmas special, and I did the voice of Gene Kelly, who had that kind of a high voice when he talked, and I did all the narration.
And it was interesting because they didn't say so, and many people thought it really was him. So it was part of the agreement that if I did it, I wouldn't tell anybody. And I got away with it. And I guess I got away with it in the Pink Panther movies, too, with David Niven and Peter Sellers. And I did Tony Curtis once for a movie he walked off on. So, you know, I've done a lot of that over the years.
Who was the most difficult voice for you to master, and who was the easiest?
Well, I don't know about the easiest, but, you know, I mean, somebody that's larger than life, you know, a Dr. Phil or a, you know, Andy Rooney from 60 Minutes. You know, I remember I picked up Dr. Ruth. Do you remember her?
Right.
Like in 10 minutes. I mean, with a voice like that. Dr.
Ruth Westheimer. You know, sex is a lot like air. It's not important unless you don't get any.
some voices come very quickly. I'm working on Donald Trump right at the moment. he's going to be interesting. Going to be a lot of great material there, I'll tell you.
Now, he's somebody who doesn't seem to really have the greatest sense of humor. Are you concerned about doing a Donald Trump impersonation in front of Donald?
Well, actually, I have performed in front of him a couple of years ago, and he was a good audience. I chatted with him, and I didn't know he was going to run for president, but or even thought about impersonating him. But he has a pretty good sense of humor. I think he may surprise you. You know, I mean, that it's going to be an interesting administration, you know. I'm going to have a lot of material. I think he's going to write it for me, you know. We're going to build a wall. We're going to build a wall. And we're going to put toll booths in the tunnels they're going to dig under the wall, under the wall, under the wall.
It's always a pleasure to hear what you do, and it's even a bigger pleasure for me to have a chance to talk with you. We should mention again the book, Little by Little. People can check out your website, which is richlittle.com. Rich, I thank you.
I'll get it on Amazon.com.
Absolutely.
And if you're in Vegas, yes. Come and see me at the Tropicana Hotel.
At the Tropicana.
5 nights a week.
And you're there how many? You're there how often?
5 nights a week.
5 nights a week at the Tropicana.
Yeah,
Rich, thank you very much.
Yeah, been there over a year.
Thank you very much for talking to us, sir.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Anybody from Canada, I'm glad to talk to. Canada's a great little country. I have many ties in Canada. Well, I have belts and socks, too, but a lot of ties.
Rich Little, on the line from Las Vegas. As you heard, he's performing live at the Tropicana 5 nights a week. You can check out his show and check out his book entitled Little by Little. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0385, and you'll find links to Rich's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It's time to announce our choice for the craziest lawsuit-related story of the year. It involves a nature photographer who was sued by the group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. To make a long story short, a monkey in Indonesia took a picture of himself using the photographer's camera. It was hilarious, and the monkey's selfie went viral. Unfortunately, that's when the real monkey business started. PETA's lawsuit claimed that the monkey, not the photographer, should get all the money generated by the picture. Their lawsuit, however, ignored the fact that Congress has never given animals the right to sue over intellectual property, and that the photo happened only because of the photographer's meticulous work in setting up the shot. Let's be fair, if you think this lawsuit sounds bananas, you're not alone. A federal judge ruled that the monkey can't own a copyright. PETA, however, has appealed that decision, and a ruling is now pending. See the picture and learn more by visiting our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we're back on this first full show of the brand new year, 2017, here on The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Show is so full that I haven't got time for Stuff File news right here, right now. I do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on in this program, as we always do to end off the show. Here on a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But let's get to our next guest right here, right now. It's about something that several people bought over the Christmas holidays. You know, one gift that probably was under a lot of trees over the Christmas holidays is the popular game Watch Your Mouth. People were talking about it. Talk show hosts were playing it. Some people were even using it to propose marriage. And the irony is, we're all talking about a game that makes it difficult to talk. On the line with us right now are Peter and Allison Denby. They are the creators of Watch Your Mouth, and they join us on the line right now from Virginia. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey there. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. As I said, this game has been everywhere. I've seen it on television shows. I saw, Kelly Live was playing it. It was on Ellen's show. It's been everywhere. Where did this game start for you guys?
You know, it's not an amazing story, so much that it is an obvious one. that we were watching the movie called The Boss with Melissa McCarthy in it. And one of the scenes early in the show is her getting her teeth whitened and in her office. And she has in this mouthpiece that causes her to talk funny. And I just found it particularly humorous, and Melissa did a great job of being ridiculous with it, as she is so talented at doing. And so my wife started holding our lips open and saying funny things at each other and laughing, and one thing led to another, and we built that concept into something that would allow interaction between teams and give them content to laugh about and a little bit of structure around it, and we had a game.
Okay, so besides the fact that you can't really speak, how did you come up with the rules of the game once you got past the giggling amongst yourselves over what it sounded like?
Well, the whole premise behind this is laughter and bringing people together and lowering the barriers to people laughing. And so one of our first criteria to this was, let's make it simple and easy to understand and something you can understand even after several adult beverages. And so the rules are were simple. You read something, your partner has to figure out what the heck you just said, and you take turns, and there's a little bit of structure around how long you have and how many rounds there are, and he or she with the most points wins. That's really all there is to it on purpose.
Now, how long ago did you guys come up with this prototype for the game? Between the time you saw that movie, for instance, and you had a product?
We had the product a little bit before May of this year. Our Kickstarter campaign went live in May, and then it's just been an adventurous ride since then.
Wow. Now, one of the things I'm actually very impressed by, besides the success of the game, and we'll get to that in a moment, is the fact that the two of you just sat there watching this movie and were giggling with each other trying to talk. I got to admit, Allison, that that to me is the heartwarming part of this entire story, as you as a couple.
We're kind of silly. We also had, when we finally got our prototypes in, we had all the kids in the neighborhood and our neighbors coming over, testing it out to see if it was just us that liked it or if other people would be open to trying it out. And the kids absolutely loved it. And next thing you know, they're all coming to me with words that are difficult to say and wanting to come up with phrases. And it kind of started off with them and ourselves and Urban Dictionary and a few other sources. And then Peter came up with a great idea of doing the community card program. So if you go on our website, wymgame.com, there's a community card program that you click on, and you can offer phrases that you developed, and you can choose to have your name and your state or country published if we were to choose you. So a lot of our game, a lot of our phrases within our base game and our expansion packs have those contributors' names on them.
Wow.
And for us, that's just a really fun way of engaging our community because, again, this is all about bringing people together. And so we have folks that are offering these ideas. They get credit for it. They're playing the game and they're like, holy cow, look, there's my name. That's my phrase. This is awesome. So it's just really fun for them to have a part in this because their name literally gets printed on every single game that's distributed. So, I mean, it's not an exclusive one or two game type of deal. It's out there and they love it.
Now, what were you guys doing before the success of this game? I mean, were you game makers traditionally, or did you guys have full-time jobs doing other things?
I was the complete opposite. I was an accountant. So I'm good with numbers, logistics, and planning, which is kind of what I fed into our partnership with this project.
Yep. And this is Peter. I've always been involved in startups and innovation. So this was in my wheelhouse, but this is definitely our first game. This is not our first consumer product. But it's definitely the first game and definitely the most fun project we've done.
Okay, so somebody who's involved in startups, you have a goal in mind. Dare I say you have dreams in mind. In your wildest dreams, you figure something you're going to create or bring to market is going to be successful. But did you ever anticipate in such a short space of time the success of something like Watch Your Mouth?
Honestly, Peter, we did not. We're honored, we're humbled by the reception this idea has had. We started our Kickstarter campaign with a $6,000 goal, which translated to selling maybe 1,000 games or so. And the videos started, and people really latched on to the laughter. And I think it really spoke to the fact that the world needed some laughter. It's been a pretty wild ride in 2016, and I think people were craving an opportunity just to forget about it and laugh until they cried or till their stomach hurt or till they pee themselves or their dentures fell out. And so it just kind of appealed to such a broad audience that it was great. I mean, and speaking candidly, I mean, yeah, sure, this is the entrepreneur's dream. It really is. This is what we all dream for. This is what I've been trying to work toward for the past 18 years to try to have something of this type of impact take hold and really find what people are needing in terms of value and all that boring business stuff. But it's been probably the biggest adventure is just keeping up with growing our team and trying to keep all the balls in the air.
So you've been an overnight success, 18 years in the making is what's basically happened here.
I think that's very well said.
Now, the promotion of this, the idea that suddenly you see it on talk shows, was that something you did or did that happen organically? Did they find the video and request the game, or did you send it out to people in the hopes that it would get seen on television, or what?
The nature of this game is very shareable from an organic perspective, and the huge majority of our marketing and exposure has come through organic, and it's which means that they just found it, they loved it, and they wanted to make a fool of themselves in front of other people.
Now, please, please, please tell me you've heard from Melissa McCarthy.
We have not.
Oh,
no, sadly, we have not. But we would love the opportunity to play the game with her.
Yes, that would be hilarious.
That would be great.
At the very least, yeah. Find her agent and send her one.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Now, as I said in the introduction, it showed up many places. One of them was a marriage proposal. Did you guys talk to the couple to be?
We heard about it when they tagged us in their Facebook post. That's the first time we had heard about it. Now we are planning on doing some fun special things for their ceremony to help support the dream that they attained with that and the way that they included us in that very special moment. And so we've reached out to them since. But no, that was an amazing surprise for us. Just as amazing for us as hopefully it was for the bride to be.
Now, anybody I talk to who looks at this game, and a lot of people, I mean, everybody knows the game we're talking about, but everyone says one of two things: wow, that looks like a lot of fun. Two, how hygienic is that? How do you clean that thing?
Sure.
Yeah, that is a question that we get frequently, and our game, unlike any other possible knockoffs or counterfeits that might be out there, which, you know, flattery is the best form, but so it's for families, for children 8 and up. So we've gone through rigorous certifications and safety checks because it also falls under a children's toy. So we've gone through all the safety requirements needed for it. For cleaning it, it could be just like a utensil where you just clean it with soap and water. But you can also put it on the top shelf of a dishwasher. And then on top of that, for the ones that are germaphobes, you can actually boil them. They are safe to boil.
So, Peter, the way we normally can do this, as Allison said, is it's just like a spoon or a fork that you reuse and you put in your mouth all the time. You put it in the dishwasher, you can clean it with soap and water, you can boil it if you feel so inclined, but but they're very safe. They've been extensively tested through all the at least on the in America, the Consumer Product Safety Commission and all that. We've learned a lot through that process, but everything is certified and ready to go.
I think it's the first time I've ever talked about a game that is dishwasher safe. That's fantastic.
Right.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is wymgame.com, correct? That's wymgame.com?
That's right, and that's how, using that same WYM game, you can find us on all the social medias as well. Yeah.
Peter and Allison, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Hey, thank you so much for the interest. Really enjoy your show, and really appreciate the opportunity to share some of the story with you and your audience.
Peter and Allison Denby, creators of the game Watch Your Mouth. Again, their website is wymgame.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0385, and you'll find the links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Apparently the plan by a 33-year-old unlicensed, un-car-registered driver in Perth, Australia, in November, to keep from being stopped by police, was to print police in large, official-looking letters on the side of her white Hyundai using a blue dry erase board marker. She was, of course, quickly stopped by police. I mean, why? Oh, why? If you're trying to do your best not to bring attention to yourself to the police, would you do something that would clearly bring attention to yourself to the police and anyone else who is not visually impaired? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0385. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0385. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.